Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. Hey friends, I'm so grateful you've taken the time to join in today. You know, the call to parenting truly is a call to kingdom work. The everyday challenges and the joys of parenting, well, it's all part of God's plan to draw young souls to Himself. So our guest for this month, Callie Rich, she calls this the sacredness of the mundane. I like that. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing what the Lord is teaching her on her parenting journey. Now, Callie and her husband, Jonathan, they have 7 children. 5 of their children joined their family through adoption. So they run a growing business, serve their community, and from what I can see, they are striving to raise kind, compassionate children who really love Jesus and others well. So let me share with you my conversation with Callie Rich. Callie Rich, thank you for being with me today.
I'm glad to be here.
So I want you to just kind of jump in, Callie, and tell us how you and Jonathan, how the Lord just kind of built this family you've got going on and how that all came about and what you guys do.
Okay. We are the parents of 7 children, ages 13 to 1. And when we started out, we got married really young. I was 19 and Jonathan was 24. I finished college and totally our plan was we weren't going to have kids until after I went and got my master's. And I graduated from my bachelor's pregnant. And so that started our parenting journey with our first child. And then at the time we were thinking about having a second child, we just couldn't reach an agreement on when was the right time. And the topic of adoption kept kind of circling.
Right.
We were just praying through, like, what is the Lord trying to say?
Yeah.
And we took, I went with a friend to a conference at her church, in Texas. We took the weekend to pray about it separately.
Mm-hmm.
And I just called him and said, I feel like the Lord is saying we're supposed to adopt. And
wow.
He said, okay.
He did?
Yeah. So, and in our marriage before that, when we couldn't reach one accord and we prayed about it separately, we really felt like it was the Lord working something out for us. So when we did reach the same decision, we said, okay, well, let's move forward in that way. So that's how we ended up entering into adoption. And that was our second child. She came home. Let's see. We started the adoption process in 2010. And she came home about 20 months later.
Oh, wow. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. It did not feel quick at the time.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
I thought, yeah, oh, the Lord has spoken, and we are just going to walk through this,
yeah,
these doors.
Exactly.
But, you know, now we know that good things are also hard things.
Oh, they are. Yeah. And good things really grow in hard places. I have that all over my house, and I firmly believe that. So at the time, you're a nurse, right? Like, you're doing your passion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I went to school with the intention of being a labor and delivery nurse. I had the privilege of shadowing under some medical professionals when I was in high school, and I just, the first time I saw a baby born,
I knew
that's what I wanted to do. So that was totally, was my passion and definitely a gifting.
Yeah, oh, I agree. And you are not, I mean, you're in one of our downtown hospitals, a huge hospital, from what I understand. So
yes,
you saw a lot. And I know that was a passion of yours. And, you know, I told you earlier, I don't know that I've ever really touched on this because I was doing something I love too, you know, and the Lord started really moving in our heart to build our family. You call, you really talk into, would you say leave? You don't really leave your passion, but you just kind of step into a new calling, but the Lord uses those things, as you said, your gifting, you just kind of transfer that. I mean, how did that work for you?
So it was after our third child was one. My husband had a small business that was growing. I was helping him with that. I was working as little as I could at the hospital, and we were still totally drowning in laundry.
Oh, yeah.
And it just felt like our home life felt chaotic as we're trying to juggle kids and all the demands of home. And I said I was going to step away just for a year. And honestly, 1 year turned into now, indefinitely.
Yeah.
But at the point I stepped away from my career as a nurse, I entered what I called learning about the sacredness of the mundane. And that was really me unraveling. I spent probably 18 months grieving the loss of my career and also learning to unravel my identity of who I was from what I did.
Right.
And I think we can all say that as believers of our worth is not found in what we do, but it really goes back to forever. In culture, we're told, especially as women, you can be whatever you want to be,
Yeah.
which is wonderful. And I want my daughters to know that as well. But I also realized that I had internalized a bit of my worth is found in what I can be. And it felt like settling to be doing laundry and dishes and cooking meals for kids who said, "Eh, I don't like this." So, I mean, it was a self journey in it. And like you said, what I ended up finding is that my passion, I thought, was labor and delivery nursing, but I realized that there were these greater threads of passion that the Lord had woven into the vehicle that I was using labor and delivery for, which would be racial reconciliation or adoption or helping mothers in their journey into motherhood and in the first part of motherhood. And those things, I found ways to dabble in them outside of my professional career now
Yeah.
and live them.
Yeah, exactly. And I talk to a lot of foster moms, adoptive moms that maybe they've never given birth to a child. And so even though they prepared all this paperwork and went through all the classes and worked with their agency or whatever, the process was, mothering is just, it's not out of a textbook. And man, I could see how the Lord could really, is really using you to help other moms like adjust to this new normal.
Yeah, totally.
And so, and in doing that, it's just knowing, okay, because it can get lonely. It can be, I don't know if so much lonely, but it can be isolating, to
Very
every, yeah,
isolating.
very isolating that everyone's out and you're at home. And especially with adoption, like I know my older girls, Callie, went from 0 to 3 children each in about under 3 years because of adoption and, having little surprises, So,
Right.
and they, it was totally like one came off the mission field from overseas, and then her life changed drastically. One was a school teacher in the public schools here. And so everything kind of changed drastically for them. And we need one another to continue in that calling and not be ashamed to say, I need a little help here, or I'm feeling a little isolated here. And, man, I think that's a great point. I don't think I've ever really talked about that much before, but it was a struggle for me as well. What are some things you've done, like you said, like finding joy in doing those things?
I think just trying to find the sacredness in the Lord's presence, exactly where I am,
Oh, yeah.
and that these things do matter.
Yeah.
And truly, just I think it's a gift to find the freedom of who you are is not defined by what you do.
Yeah.
And I think that that's more of a newer concept in our day and age. That you would be wrapped up in those things, but it was like, oh, I'm still, my value is the same. And what I'm doing, I thought about this recently, how because of the age of our children, I'll have 30 years of children in my home.
Yeah, me
And
too. Yeah.
I was like, wow, that is a career. That's an entire lifetime career. And you know, I have been informed that it doesn't end when they leave your house. But I just thought, wow, 30 years is a really long time to be doing something. And I want to be good at it.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't mean that you can't do that and another profession. I think that, just the way that we're positioned with my husband's work and now 7 children, it's a lot to manage and have a different career going at the same time right now.
I'm with you. I just think it's an incredible, it's a whole career. 5 of your kids joined your family through adoption, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so are they open adoptions? Were they private? Can you tell us some about that, how you navigated that?
Sure. We initially adopted through an agency with our oldest daughter, and we do not have a relationship with her birth family, and that is just of their choosing. We would love to have an open relationship with them or any relationship at all, but we also respect that everybody's journey with adoption is different, and we hope that one day they're ready for that. So we had a biological child we adopted. We had another biological child we adopted again. And at first we didn't have any contact for the first 6 months. And then her birth family was ready to meet in person. That was the first time we met them.
Oh, wow.
And then we slowly built a relationship over time. We were communicating through our agency. Then around her first birthday, we were communicating enough that I asked if she would be comfortable to communicate directly. And we began communicating directly at that point through texts and email. And we just got closer and closer. And actually, so our 4 youngest children are biological siblings.
Oh, wow. So, that's great.
Yeah. So by the time we had 2 children that we shared together, we were like, okay, this is more, this is a linked family relationship.
Yes.
And actually, it's just been beautiful to see how it's blossomed. So for our youngest 2 children, their birth mom asked me to be her support person. I was there with her the whole time at the hospital. And I actually, ironically, full circle, this is a little divergent from what you asked, but going back to the labor and delivery thing, when our youngest daughter was born, I actually was the one that delivered her.
Oh,
and
Callie, that's amazing.
Yes. In that moment, I really felt like the Lord said, I see you and nothing is wasted.
That's right. I love that.
And I had delivered so many babies before, but to deliver your own daughter. And for her to enter the world just cradled between her 2 mothers was just really a beautiful experience for all of us.
Oh, only the Lord. That is amazing.
Truly. So we have a very open relationship. We text or talk every day just about, and it's been really wonderful to be in relationship with her.
Oh, man. And just, and I'm real big on that helps from what I've seen. I do trauma training, that sort of thing, just the mental health as kids become preteens and they begin to ask questions, kind of put the pieces together. They have to do that for themselves and kind of discover the autonomous self. And for them to be able to see this relationship, wow. I mean, I just think that's incredible. So you shared before that why you liked open adoption is you want to enter into those relationships with your kids now. Because with social media, definitely, they're going to find those families.
They absolutely are. Well, and we also don't want them to feel like it's duplicit or they have to choose one family or another. With adoption, as you know, it's beautiful and redemptive and also messy. And there's loss.
Yeah.
We just had a conversation around our dinner table last night with one of our children discussing, sometimes I wonder what it would be like to live in that home. And those are conversations that are not threatening in our house. And we encourage our children to have them because it's possible. Well, with adoption, you have to hold joy and grief side by side. Mm-hmm. You cannot separate them. It's, if someone has told you that it's only beautiful or only joyful, then it's a diminished perspective of the richness, but also the heaviness of adoption. And so we tell our children, this is a safe space. You can be fully grateful that you're a part of our family and also grieve that you're not living in your birth family. Mm-hmm. And there's space to hold both of those things side by side. They're not mutually exclusive. So we have those conversations, and we want to enter into the relationship with their birth families with them, because we don't want them to grow up and feel like, well, do I need to spend this holiday with this family or that family? We spend them together, you know? So, and that's been our solution so far, is that we have spent major holidays together as one larger family instead of two. But even for our children who are biologically linked to other siblings, and then the ones that aren't, we want all of them to be in relationship together, so that when they grow up, our daughter isn't like, oh, I want to have a sister's weekend. Do I have that with my biological sister, or do I have it with the sister I grew up with? What does that mean? But if they're all in relationship, then they all share in that sisterhood, instead of her feeling like she has to choose one direction or another.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I just can't imagine just how, I can, because I've watched it, just the, the growth, in her heart of like allowing her to say, okay, here's how my pieces go together. And this is good. And this is my story. And though I had some loss, you know, though, like you said, you have to hold loss and grief side by side. But I mean, if families, have to have the support of someone else, you know, helping them, this is a beautiful picture of how to do it. So you actually do holidays together when you can.
Yeah, we do. We started inviting, so our youngest children, their birth family, over for Christmas, and they come over and we share the holiday together. And it's, you know, whatever holidays that we're in town, we spend them together. And all of, so our child, our, so our youngest four childs, her, their birth mother has two other children that she's parenting. And so those children and our children all play together like,
oh, wow,
siblings. And it feels probably like, to what other people would be like, cousins getting together
exactly.
to play.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And you have that the gift of being able to do it, 'cause you live in the same city. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which obviously is a privilege that we have, and a lot of people don't. But if it's possible to maintain a relationship in geography, I mean, it has been such a gift for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, going back to what you said earlier, as parents, we have to do the extra work on this. And these kids are going to launch one day, and they're going to launch as an adult, a young adult of their race. And
yes,
not coming from white parents, or, you know, no one's going to know that, you know, about them. I know our daughter who's Asian, she went to college last year, and just watching her navigate that and people's questions about her family and seeing her family picture and all that has to, you have to ready them for that. Like your conversation at the dinner table last night, which I love family dinner. I think it's a lost art, but I really fight for it at least three nights a week. And that's about as good as it gets for us right now. But that's when the conversations come out and kids kind of can feel that openness. I often say that as they become teenagers, they don't love so much the you looking at them when they're talking. You know, they go through that awkward stage about middle school or preteens,
yeah,
and shoulder to shoulder, driving somewhere, doing something fun together, has also been a great time for us as well to be able to have those open conversations. I know my son started one. He came home when he was 12, and he just found that with my dad, my dad, when he was still living, and when they were driving, he just felt that connection with my dad, and he would really start opening up about bad memories or things he was struggling with. So, but just knowing the freedom there to have those open conversations is such a reminder for all of us today. Well, talking about fun, how in the world do you get seven children to cooperate and do a weekend lemonade stand? And you're just kind of known for it. Like, this thing's a hit in your area. How did that come about?
Well, our kids this summer begged to to do a lemonade stand. And finally I gave in and we got all the stuff and they did their stand and they had great success. So I was thinking as I was putting it together, I was like, you know, a good mom helps them pull off their lemonade stand. A great mom helps them think about it, strategize, learn
That's
about
right.
entrepreneurship. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm a great mom no matter what.
That's
but
right.
We are going to do the next step. So we had a business meeting afterwards and we talked about, okay, here's how much your supplies cost. So you're going to pay back for that. I fronted your supplies. You're going to pay back for that. And what do you think worked well? What do you think didn't? So it was a good opportunity for them. And they enjoy, I mean, they loved the ability to make money and they decided to reinvest half of their profits back into their business. So they saved half of it and then distributed half. And then we used that money to buy more supplies. And so they have really grand plans for where this family lemonade business is going.
I love it. That's what you and Jonathan do.
I'm just trying to ride the wave of them learning about, business strategy.
I love it. And I teach a lot. I taught a class last night that attached families, they have fun together. That's one of the things we don't want to miss is having fun together. And so I know it's a lot of work for mom and dad kind of up front, like you said, but when you can stand back and they begin to take over, wow. I mean,
yeah. And what you said, it's good for their family dynamic. They're having to learn to work together.
Yes.
You know, I told him, I was like, listen, nobody wants to buy lemonade from fighting siblings. You know, no one can be crying at the lemonade stand. It doesn't work.
That's right. That's right. And so what's the lemonade float? I think you guys created, am I saying it right? You have a unique drink.
They have their signature lemonade
float. I love
it. Which is vanilla ice cream and lemonade, just like a root beer float, but with lemonade. And they would have you know it's 5-star reviews.
Oh, my goodness. I've got to drive down and try that. That's amazing. So they just pour the lemonade on top of the ice cream and let it do its thing.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, I just I encourage everyone to just start. I don't want to put pressure on you, but just you're just so transparent on your post. And so Callie Rich loves you on Instagram. Guys, you'll just love it. You'll love following her. You'll feel like, oh, yeah, we tried that, or that's a great idea, or, oh, yeah, I get you. I struggled with that as well, because you're really encouraging a lot of moms and dads out there, and I'm just so grateful for it.
Well, thank you. There are a lot of people interested in what is it like being in a big family.
That's right.
And I was an only child, so this is a new thing for me, too.
Yeah.
I'm just as surprised as all the rest of you.
Hey guys, for the sake of time, we're going to finish our conversation with Callie Rich next time. So be sure to join me for part 2. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.